Classical music is in a cycle. Is it coming back again? We're here with the editor of American Record Guy, Donald Vroon, who can tell us about his magazine and maybe the state of the classical music biz. Thanks for being here, Donald.
Hello.
Let's start off with your magazine. It's American Record Guide, and it's been around for quite a while. I think it's since the 30s or something?
1934 or 35, depending on where you view it as actually beginning, because there were precursors. The people who started it started other magazines and then changed the name and so on.
And you've been with it since?
1987.
And over the...
Actually, I've written for the magazine since 1983.
So over the years, I mean, it's been around for quite a while. I have to admit, I didn't even know of the magazine's existence until just recently, and I didn't know it was published here in Cincinnati.
It's sort of a connoisseur's item.
So unlike, it's different then from magazines like Gramophone, BBC, Classic, FM. You see those in the stores all over the place, but those are also published in England. So what's the difference between American Record Guide and those magazines?
Well, we view them as glossies, essentially. They're aiming for a wider audience. They have lots and lots of advertising. Their graphics are more striking. We're aimed at connoisseurs, particularly record collectors and insiders in the classical music business.
And how many insiders are there?
Are you asking about subscriptions? Well, our circulation is down to about 6,000 now.
And there's articles all over the place. Just recently, there is another book by Norman LeBrecht.
Good book.
Who has one out called Maestros, Masterpieces, and Madness, The Secret Life and Shameful Death of the Classical Record Industry. Now, if you read his stuff, classical music is dead, has been dead, been buried, lots of dirt on the grave. What's your opinion?
I think he's a wonderful writer, and I think that just about everything he says is true, but of course he exaggerates, and why not? It's a serious situation. So he's maybe seem like an alarmist, but it's an alarming situation. And his latest book, The Life and Death of Classical Music, I think it's called, is just out. It's the same kind of thing.
Now, is it classical music or more of the record industry with classical music?
He always veers more toward the record industry, which he seems to know better than the industry in general. The record industry, of course, is being faced by a lot more challenges than classical music as such. That is, orchestras are not facing quite the same kind of challenge as, for example, the reduction of the big record companies, cutting way, way back on what they're producing, the internet, and music downloading, though people don't download classical music by and large, yet music downloading affects us because the companies lose revenue over that, which affects what they can spend on the classical.
Now, how does that affect the American Record Guide? Because, I mean, each issue is, well, this the one I'm looking at right now is the March-April issue, 250 pages plus, tons of reviews. I guess there's still a lot of material, a lot of classical music coming out.
Yeah, and the March-April is a smaller than usual issue. It's more like 300 usually. There's a lot of material, and it's becoming a matter of the smaller labels filling in where the bigger labels are not doing it anymore.
Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Probably a good thing. Well, in everything, you have quantity versus quality. And when the big labels were well-run and they had scouts, you might say, like baseball teams have scouts, they had people that found out where the good musicians were and who they were and grabbed them and cultivated them and built a career for them and so on and so on. So they made much bigger stars than the small labels are going to be able to do. And if the right people were doing that A&R business, you got some really good results out of it. But the big companies sort of lost their way in the last 10 or 20 years.
Now, it seems to me that there are a lot of smaller labels coming out now. They seem to be taking up the slack, not only with the amount of releases they have and the material, but also they're picking up some of the big-name artists now. I'm thinking labels like Naxos that was very small 10, 12 years ago, and they picked up a lot of it. Hyperion is one that I'm familiar with, BIS. And these are smaller labels, not the big, huge international cartels.
And they're saving the whole thing. Those are the labels that are the labels of the future. The big companies can no longer afford to do it, I don't think. Their accountants say it costs too much to do all these things. But these medium-sized labels, really the ones you're talking about, like BIS in Sweden, they can afford it because they haven't got the overhead.
So is that then reflected in the American Record Guide every issue?
Sure, there's much more BIS than there is RCA.
Well, let's also talk about how the business of classical music, I guess really the distribution is changing too. We don't have the big labels getting into the big stores. I mean, even like Tower Records last year, when they went away, a major place for buying classical music just disappeared. So now you have places you can buy on the internet. Classical music supposedly is being downloaded quite a bit with iTunes, and that is that reflected in the record guide?
You're dealing with the whole phenomenon of capitalism, and the American pattern especially has been smaller companies get gobbled up by bigger companies. Back in the 80s, the classical labels, the biggest labels, connived with places like Tower Records to eliminate all the smaller stores. Essentially, that's what capitalism does. The big sharks eat the little fish. And the stores were eliminated, and they got bigger and bigger. And then, of course, they overexpanded and couldn't handle it anymore. And the industry couldn't keep up that kind of growth, and it all collapses. So it's a cycle, I suppose, as you said right at the beginning. And now we're here to see what's going to come next.
Well, I guess the height of that cycle may have been, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. I found some figures here that there were 276 recordings of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony in the catalog at one time, 435 recordings of Vivaldi's The Four Seasons, and more of them keep coming out. So the question is, how do you and your writers, how do you get interested in yet another recording of these pieces, and how do you get your readers to care?
I should say that part of what's killing the industry is that they went crazy and made far too many recordings of things like the Beethoven Fifth and the Vivaldi Four Seasons. We're interested. You never know when the recording you're listening to of the Beethoven Fifth might be the best come down the pike in the last 10 or 20 years. It might have something that nothing else really has. We're interested. But at first you look at it and say, oh, no, not another. But then we love music, we who review it. And if we didn't love it, we wouldn't be doing it, especially since it pays so little in our field. And we put it on and we're just swept away by it.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask before we go is, again, a lot of the classical music business is involving itself in the newer technology. You have orchestras using the internet, doing downloads. A lot of orchestras are even creating their own record labels to release their recordings. Is the American Record Guide, is that going to stay just a print matter, or is it going to go into other media?
We have a website. Everybody does. The current issue is always up on the website, so subscribers can either read it there or read it in the print edition. European subscribers might find it cheaper to just read it on the website, and we allow that. But, you know, I get letters every week from readers who say, I will never go the way of downloading music from the internet. This will never appeal to me, and so on and so on. Because classical record collectors have developed this discernment, this feeling of what is valuable and what is not, and what is well done and what is not. They have all become critics. All of us who collect classical records are amateur critics. And they don't want to sit and listen to, say, a radio station that chooses their music for them. They want to choose themselves, and they want to have the background and the reading and so on to understand why they like what they like. And they want to have something tangible to hold in their hand, like a record album. A record album can be a CD or a tape or an LP, but it's something they can hold in their hands. It's a possession, and it's a possession they can put on their wall, in their bookcase, and it's a possession that says, I have discernment. I have worked at collecting these records and brought together the best performances of the best music, and this is a reflection of who I am. There's something tangible about recordings that you're never going to get on anything in the way of downloading or the internet or anything else, and they won't give it up. And there's going to be a lot of people like that still left when this is all, when all the dust settles. There's going to be a lot of people like that. And maybe we'll still be around.
Now, I was surprised. I actually expected you to say something like the quality of the recording with, you know, the compressed bit rates and all that is the main reason. But just the physical pleasure of actually holding a CD.
The letters all mention the quality, too. One letter said to me, if a CD is about 1/10 as good as an essay CD, then what you download from internet is about 1/10 as good as a CD. And we can't go back to that.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much for letting us into the American Record Guide. The editor, Donald Vroon, with us. And I'm Frank Johnson for Around Cincinnati.